For over a half century, the Paris Review has garnered a reputation for discovering exciting new writers whose eclectic, raw, and visionary voices have shaped the landscape of American literature. It has debuted such authors as Philip Roth, Rick Moody, Adrienne Rich, and works that are now considered some of the greatest in modern literature. Jim Carroll's The Basketball Diaries, Jonathan Franzen's The Corrections made their first appearance in the pages of this legendary journal. The Paris Review has continued its success, seeking out and championing the works of emerging writers, which is on full display in Penguin's new anthology, The Unprofessionals, New American Writing, from the Paris Review, edited and curated by Lauren Stein. Lauren Stein joined the Paris Review as its third editor in 2010. During his tenure, the Review has received two National Magazine Awards, as well as Webby Honors, Pushcart Prizes, and O. Henry Awards. Lauren Stein, welcome to the Roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
A great pleasure to have you on the program, and a great pleasure to read this collection and this book. How did the idea come about of wanting to do this?
Well, you know, when we relaunched the magazine 5 years ago, there was a lot of skepticism among our colleagues. I was a book editor. And the question of what the point was of a literary magazine in 2010, especially one that really exists in print, kept coming up. And then these last 5 years have just been the most exciting moment, I think, in American literature, in fiction especially, since the mid-90s. There's been this incredible explosion of talent. So it's been a great time to be publishing a literary magazine, and I would never have guessed, none of us would have guessed, that it would be such a great time. And our circulation almost doubled in that time, and we have more readers now than ever before. And I wanted to take a snapshot of this moment, because it's largely the young writers who can account for that, and these experiments that they're doing are just, I think they all belong in one book.
When you think of your place, and as you say, the magazine was relaunched, the mission statement is what? What are you trying to accomplish with each volume?
Well, with each new one that we put out four a year.
Right.
It depends a lot on what we get in. We don't make assignments. We print stuff that comes to us. Less than 1% of what's sent to us, but from issue to issue, each one really depends on what's in it. But, you know, we're really a magazine that is meant to put fiction, poetry, literary essays first. We're really a magazine about writing for writing's sake, and there are very few of those left, and there are some that have very small circulations, but this is a magazine that can actually reach the publishing community, but also just general readers all over the country and all over the world. So that's what we exist to do. And to do it outside the hyper-monetized space of the internet.
Talk a little bit about that, of claiming that space outside of the internet, not claiming it, but certainly exploring it further and understanding its place and preserving it in some way.
Sure. I mean, you know, the internet has been for literature, I think, something like what photography was for painting in the 19th century. It's really taught us a lot about stuff that we didn't even know about what was in front of us. It's really made it clearer what literary writing is for, one thing that it's for. And I can give you the negative. There was a great little essay published recently, not in the Paris Review, but by a contributor to this volume, a young poet named Nick Laird, who grew up in rural Ireland but lives in New York now. And he's talking about the difference between being a kid and going to the bookstore and picking up these volumes of poetry that he would then take home and pore over. And nowadays, when so many good poems are getting published on the internet. And he talks about how that's a problem. And I'm going to quote from it because I have it right actually open in front of me. He said, "The internet, with its endless choice, its banner ads, its IMs and GIFs and Vines, is a disastrous locale for most poetry. Does anything less than the immediately shocking or charming get attention? Trying to hear the tonally complex voice of a complicated poem is like trying to hear a moth in a hurricane, and all the time the hurricane is screaming that there are a billion other things you could be doing." I think the same thing goes for stories and for essays too. You know, there's a real pressure to sell yourself at all times, and we all feel it. And we all spend a lot of our time doing just that online.
As the editor of the Paris Review and as the curator for this particular collection, what are you looking for? What makes the cut for you?
Well, it's such a tiny, tiny percentage of what we get that each thing is really chosen on its own terms, and I know that's a cop-out, but I have noticed that the stories that speak to me tend to have maybe three things in common. There's a voice, a narrator who you just absolutely believe in. Even if the narrator doesn't say the word I, there's a voice there, a person's voice. And then that person is trying to tell you the truth, at least in the terms of the story. It's someone who's really trying to be as reliable and trustworthy as possible, which often brings you up against the limits of what that person knows or can say. And then the third thing is, wisdom is a devalued word, but there's an effort to settle a troubled conscience often. So there's someone trying to make things right in his or her own mind. And then those are qualities that are there on the page, and I would say that underneath all of that, the writers we publish tend to be very literate people. They tend to spend a lot of time reading. They tend to know what's been done before, you know?
When you see this work and you put it together, how conscious are you of what works with another piece in the sense of, oh, this poem or this story may be great for this edition, or maybe it would go better with this collection and to do it in our next edition?
We sometimes hold things for that reason. But it's often in the sequencing that we make sure that things belong next to each other more than we worry about. We don't do theme issues. The funny thing is, of course, you know, we're not robots, and so I notice when I look at an old issue, maybe I'm crazy and maybe it's an illusion, but it often seems that the issue reflects things that I've been worrying about or thinking about in my own life. But I mean, I'm not sure that anyone else would notice that. I think it might be a confirmation bias. I think in general, we try not to keep a lot of stuff in the well. It's kind of fun when we put an issue to bed. We just sent one off to the printer. We immediately start thinking what's going to be in the next one,
and
I kind of enjoy that discovery that happens with each new issue.
Penguin's new anthology is The Unprofessionals, New American Writing from the Paris Review, edited and curated by Warren Stein. Warren, thank you very much for joining us this morning. A great pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.